Our time of standing pat, of protecting narrow interests and putting off unpleasant decisions, that time has surely passed. Starting today, we must pick ourselves up, dust ourselves off, and begin again the work of remaking America.
So dust off this memory. Think back, way back to March 2008. Hillary Clinton was in the thick of the Democratic primaries, and her main line of attack against Barack Obama, we need someone who will be ready on day one. Well, it's day one. So is Obama ready? We at the Brian Lehrer Show are certainly ready to cover the Obama administration. He is taking day one actions. Maybe you heard this morning, or maybe you haven't even heard yet, that the new president has ordered the Defense Department to suspend all Guantanamo military tribunals, and a judge at Gitmo has already this morning granted that request to suspend one particular war crimes trial that was underway of a young Canadian in what may be the beginning of the end for the Bush administration's entire system of trying alleged terrorists under the special trial system. So day one, ready to do something. John Heilman is ready, contributing editor at New York Magazine. He's been following Obama from the earliest days of the campaign, and he joins us now to, in a way, tie a ribbon on the Obama candidacy in transition and talk about what day one brings and beyond. Hey, John, welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. It's great to be here, as always.
And how long ago does March 2008 feel to you right now?
March 2008, that was at least three decades ago, Brian. I can't even remember what March 2008 was like now. It seems like a long time ago. And you know, I think by March, though, we sort of thought Obama was going to win. You know, January is the time that really feels like a long time ago, or December of 2007, when we still thought Hillary Clinton would be the next president.
That's right. By the way, another thing going on, and we'll talk more about this with some economists later, but, you know, we don't have a Treasury Secretary right now. The Bush team is gone, and the economy is still doing what it's doing. The banking crisis is rearing up again. Tim Geithner, the nominee for Treasury Secretary, is testifying right now at his confirmation hearings. And he just said that he apologizes to the American people for failing to pay $34,000 in Social Security and Medicare taxes earlier this decade. And he also apologized to Congress. Oops. So day one is not bumpless.
No, and you know, even if yesterday, if today is actually in some ways day two, I guess, you know, yesterday was not bumpless either, you know, with John Cornyn, the senator from Texas, putting a hold on Hillary Clinton's nomination. We were supposed to have a Secretary of State today, Brian. We don't have that either. So there's been a couple little hitches, although I expect that by the end of the day, both those officials will be at their desks.
Right. And the Clinton thing, for people who don't know, they tried to do this by acclamation, by voice vote.
Correct.
If no one objected in the entire Senate. And Senator Cornyn, Republican from Texas, did stand up to object. And I guess he just wanted to make the point that there were unresolved questions, as far as he was concerned, about the potential conflicts of interest with the Clinton Foundation, correct?
Correct. He wanted to see, I mean, if it were up there, he has no chance to affect this policy, but he was saying that he wanted to see greater disclosure and to have more ability to review what some of the foreign donations are coming into the Clinton Foundation. Again, I think it was mostly a rhetorical point, because it was all it was going to do was delay her a day. But again, you know, it's not a significant hitch. At the same time, it does tell you that, you know, the transition, which is a period where you are running largely a theoretical administration, and you can obviously screw it up badly. We're now, like, you know, we're now in the real world here, and senators and members of the House are going to have their say, whether those are symbolic gestures or actual ones. They're gonna make some noise along the way.
And we'll see if Hillary gets confirmed 98-2, maybe Cornyn and David Vitter, Republican from Louisiana, who voted against her in committee for the same reason. Maybe they'll vote yes on the floor. Who knows? Maybe they'll abstain. Maybe a few other Republicans.
Right.
But it's going to be overwhelming. But what about Geithner? You said he'll probably be confirmed by the end of the day, despite this lapse on back taxes, which everybody says he should have knew that he owed, because his employer, though they were outside the United States, the International Monetary Fund, made it very clear to employees like him that they had to pay their own Medicare and Social Security taxes because there was no withholding. And even though he tried to take a child care deduction for sending his kids to summer camp, can I take a child care deduction for sending my kids to summer camp? But despite that and the symbolic nature of it, because this guy's going to be in charge of the IRS, you think he's going to get confirmed today?
I do. I mean, I think that the Geithner thing is a real problem in the sense that I don't think we have good answers, and I think the apology today is a fine thing for him to have done. What's interesting is there's been some word from the senators on the Senate Finance Committee who said, you know, that when they asked him how he could have done this, he couldn't give them really an answer. He sort of said, well, I don't know, I screwed up, but he didn't really give an account of how he made those mistakes.
Yeah.
I think that there aren't good answers, but the truth is, I think for the reasons you just said earlier, Brian, I think that there is a sense of urgency that is in both parties that there needs to be a Treasury Secretary, given the state of the economy and the state of the financial system. I think we need to have one. And I think in general, because Tim Geithner, if he was a Wall Street guy who had this problem, by which I mean someone from Goldman Sachs or someone from Lehman Brothers or something, you would have a much bigger problem. As it is, I think the positioning the Obama campaign has done, the Obama administration has done on him as having been someone who made these mistakes, but has been someone dedicated to public service. He's someone who has relatively broad bipartisan support. I think that's going to carry him through what might in other circumstances have been a much more difficult confirmation.
And we'll ask the economists who are coming on later. You can give us your take if you want, if you've been watching the Geithner confirmation hearings. If they're grilling him at all on the substance of him being one of the people who's been there, one of the people who was responsible for the old policies, even just over the last few months, one of the people who was responsible for the TARP, the bank bailout, which apparently is not really gone as they had hoped, and now they're considering, you know, going back to something like Paulson's original idea for the TARP, which is to set up this bad banks account and buy the toxic assets. But I mean, Geithner was right in there in that group that was flip-flopping all over the place on this and kind of not getting it done.
Those are all true facts, as they say, and certainly I think the management of the TARP and the creation of it, the management of it. I mean, somebody reported at one point that there have been six or seven different approaches to how to manage this bailout over the course of about 3 months. I do think that he is very much in the middle of all that, and I think, you know, you've heard criticism from progressive economists that the Obama administration on the economic side is too much implicated, not just in the formulation and the execution of the TARP, but also in the initial policy decisions back during the Clinton administration in terms of deregulating the derivatives market and so on. People like Larry Summers and Bob Rubin. This is a very Rubin-heavy administration on economic policy. It's a lot of people who are either Rubin disciples who got their start working for Rubin in the administration. It's Rubin's children who are running the economic side, and there are a lot of progressives who find that a little problematic. At the same time, I think the Obama campaign would argue two things. I think they would say, first, that these people understand the system, understand what's gone on the inside better than anyone, and that with the proper policy guidance from the top, meaning the president, that they are in the best position in some ways to fix what in some ways they broke over the course of the last decade.
Rubenesque. I think the word is Rubenesque.
That's right, although none of them, apart from Larry Summers, is really qualifies under the standard definition of Rubenesque.
Maybe the number of economic advisors that Obama has stuffed into this new structure, maybe that's Rubenesque. John Heilman from New York Magazine with us on WNYC. John, your article today about the speech called it less than thrilling, perhaps by design. What did you mean?
Yes. I think, you know, I don't think that the speech was, I mean, what you had very, I mean, he used very, I think, spare and very kind of prosaic, almost simple language throughout the speech. I think it was not, as a lot of your callers earlier this morning have been pointing out, it was not a speech designed to fire up the faithful. And I think partly people need to understand that inaugurals in general, that's not what they're for. I mean, they are, by definition, national unity events. And I think Obama takes that seriously at a strategic level. I mean, I think, and it's hard, I think, for some people on the left to understand what that means. I mean, everybody's in favor of national unity, but I think that part of what he recognizes is that for that to be a real thing, there needs to be a degree of outreach to people who a lot of people who are his core supporters don't necessarily agree with. And so you have a speech here that I think that liberals found a lot of some exciting things to get behind. I mean, they liked the implicit critique of the Bush administration on foreign policy. They liked his mention of non-believers. First time I think a president has ever acknowledged them in a litany of the faithful. And I think they found things they liked. I think conservatives loved this speech. I mean, there was a lot of kind of social conservative kind of rhetoric in it. The invocation of childish things, the invocation of scripture in general, and the personal responsibility aspect. These are there are stanzas from this speech, as has been a observed by others, that could have been spoken by Ronald Reagan and even by George W. Bush.
I think what
Obama's trying to do, Brian, is I think he really takes seriously the notion of running something that looks like a national unity government, and I think he is trying in everything he's done, from the transition through his outreach to Capitol Hill to this speech, to create a predicate for big, successful votes where he gets 70 or 80 votes in the Senate, where he wins big, bipartisan majorities for the big stuff that he has to do.
One of our Republican callers last hour kind of was ambivalent about it because he heard all those things you were just talking about positively, but he also didn't like all the Bush bashing. And so maybe that's a paradox and that's a challenge for conservatives. Of course, there aren't even a lot of conservatives left who like Bush, but he did engage in some, a fair amount of very specific policy-by-policy Bush bashing.
He did, although you'll notice it was mostly implicit, and he did it in the context. I thought it was really interesting. He laid out three false choices, right? He talked about the market being a force of good or a force for ill, whether its government should be big or small, and whether the question about our safety and ideals, or whether say we have to balance safety versus ideals. He laid those all out as false choices, where in each of those cases he was really criticizing the market fundamentalists, the small government crowd, and people who think you need to trample the Constitution in order to ensure domestic security. But again, very implicit, not explicit. And I think your caller actually heard that call earlier. It sounded to me like he was more angry with people on the mall who booed Bush and Cheney than he was actually angry with Obama. He was more angry with Obama's people, some of them, than he was with the president himself.
I think that's fair. A few more of our callers with their favorite phrases from the speech. Larry in Manhattan. Hi, Larry.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What'd you like?
Well, paraphrasing the speech, President Obama did say something which has not been picked up too much about, we'll give you our hand if you unclench your fist. I thought it was a wonderful expression.
Wonderful, wonderful line. We're actually going to play that later in the context of a foreign policy in the Obama address segment that we're going to do. Lenore in Manhattan, you're on WNYC.
Hi. I was at the Symphony Space, and because it was a small venue.
Oh, yeah, they opened Symphony Space for free for anybody who wanted to come watch the speech with a group, right?
It was wonderful. It was wonderful to be there. And by the way, they had seats reserved for children who came in just before the speech began. And they revved us up with chants for Obama, Obama. All of a sudden we heard from the balcony these cries of Obama, Obama. But the other thing I wanted to say was that when he said that about non-belief, people cheered. There was a lot of cheering, which I don't think you would hear in a lot of other places. I was very happy.
Lenore, thank you. Joel in Briarcliff Manor, you're on WNYC. Joel?
Yeah, hi. President Obama, I'm happy to say that, didn't mention Buddhists in his list.
He mentioned Muslims, Hindus, Jews, Christians, and non-believers, but he didn't specify Buddhists.
Buddhists, and there are quite a few.
Well, I don't know how far down the list of, U.S. population percentage. You didn't mention those Unitarians either.
I guess not.
Just had a Unitarian at our Martin Luther King event, who was wonderful. Before you go, John, and we're going to talk more about the economy and Geithner and all that with a couple of economists next, who's going to be the first faction to be upset with Obama? I'm starting to hear it on the phones and see it on our website a little bit with more parts of the left getting
a
little exasperated with all his towing the middle. On the other hand, there are conservative talk shows out there that I've also been listening to where they're just calling themselves the conservatives in exile, and Rush Limbaugh said he hopes Obama fails, and they're bitter from day one.
Well, I think that there are two different questions, Brian. One is who's going to get who's going to get upset first, and who's going to get upset with more consequence. And I think that the right, there are going to be people on the right who are going to oppose Obama, like as they would oppose any Democrat, tooth and nail from the very beginning. And you saw John Boehner last week criticizing the stimulus bill, and that's going to happen. I think it's not in the House, in particular, it's not with that much consequence. because of the Democratic majorities there. The Senate is trickier because of the filibuster, but I think that there are enough moderate Republicans left that the Obama administration, that's who they're playing to with a lot of this, is making sure that they don't get filibustered on important things. I think the place where there's more of a problem, though, as you suggest, is on the left. And I think, you know, you have seen it through the transition. There's been squawking about some of the appointments, particularly the somewhat hawkish foreign policy appointments. And I think you can see it within his own caucus on the left with regard to a lot of this economic stuff. And, you know, it was really noticeable when Paul Krugman, you know, a couple weeks ago attacked the composition of the stimulus bill and said, there's too many tax cuts in here, there's not enough stimulus. I think the left is where there's going to be a more difficult set of management questions in terms of building coalitions for Obama. I think you saw Nancy Pelosi last week, you know, talking about how, or maybe it was earlier this week, talking about how she wanted to make sure that the Bush tax cuts were repealed immediately. Obama seems more inclined to let them expire on time now in 2010. I think those are actually going to be the more difficult ruptures for him to deal with. I'm not saying they're unmanageable, but they are. Mm-hmm. He's going to hear it a lot from the left on a variety of different things, I think, over the course of the next year.
By the way, for Joel and Briarcliff Manor, we just looked up the stats on how many Buddhists there are in America. We looked up the CIA stats and the State Department stats, and it looks like Buddhists are the fifth largest religious group in America behind Christians, Muslims, Jews, and no religion. And with 2% of the U.S. population Buddhist, according to the State Department, that would mean a total of 5,973,000 Americans left out in that list of religious groups by the president yesterday. One more call. Kenneth in Washington Heights, you're on WNYC. What'd you like in that speech?
Yes, did anybody notice that he quoted some lyrics from an old movie, Swing Time? Ginger Rogers is teaching me how to dance at a dancing class, and he falls to the floor. Then he gets up and sings, I'll pick myself up, dust myself off. And then he changed the last line and start over again, is what is Fred Astaire saying.
He quoted Washington. He quoted Lincoln. He quoted FDR. And he quoted Swing Time. Kenneth in Washington Heights, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And John Heilman, New York Magazine political reporter, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Brian.
Nothing's impossible I have found. When my chin is on the ground, I pick myself up, dust myself off, start all over again. Don't lose your confidence if you slip. Be grateful for a pleasant trip and pick yourself up, dust yourself off, start all over again. Work like a soul inspired till the battle of the day is won. You may be sick and tired, but you'll be a man, my son.